Good evening. It is Monday, April 9th. Thanks for joining us. Michael Cohen with producer James Platy, a packed show this evening. Today we'll be talking about the Michigan Virtual University, which has just enrolled its 100,000th student. We'll find out exactly how this nonprofit company operates, and is virtual education the best way to go? Also, a Republican candidate for the state representative seat out of Clinton County joins us. He's a member of the Right to Life County Board, an NRA member, and an officer of the Clinton County Tea Party Patriots. And are neighborhoods in Charlotte soon going to have chickens in their backyards? We'll find out. But first, Bloomberg News breaking a big story on exactly why Michigan State University closed down its campus in Dubai in 2010. It was far more than just financial reasons. The campus closure highlighting a problem that's concerning federal officials when it comes to all U.S. universities. That is foreign governments bringing spies into our higher education system. To get all the details, I'm joined by Bloomberg reporter Dan Golden. You can find his article at Bloomberg.com. Dan, thanks for joining us this evening.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So when it comes to MSU's Dubai campus, it was going under, and then a Dubai-based company shows up, offers to provide both money and students for the program, although MSU President Luana Simon had some real concerns and contacted the CIA. What led her to do that?
Well, she was concerned because she's been a member of something called the National Security Higher Education Advisory Board, which the FBI and CIA set up a few years ago to try and increase awareness among university presidents of possible threats to national security from other countries that might involve sort of spying on universities. And so she had learned from those sessions that one problem is front companies. A lot of times universities may be doing research, and they may want to, you know, sell license the inventions they come up with. And when they do that, companies bid for those inventions, and the government's concerned that some of them might be fronts for countries we don't really want to do business with. So when this Dubai-based company came forward and it was offering to help recruit students from Iran, and the CIA couldn't, you know, give her any guarantees that it wasn't part of the Iranian government or an arm of the Iranian government, and we're not supposed to do business with that government. There's trade restrictions on it. So she decided that, it's better to be cautious, and she didn't take the offer.
This story was not made public when the MSU Dubai campus was closed in 2010. How did you discover the security concerns that MSU officials had at the time?
I've been working for a number of weeks on an article about, national security and universities, and focusing, to some extent on this, National Security Higher Ed Board I mentioned. And she recently became, chair of that board. And, so I interviewed her as chair of the board, and I asked her what kind of, examples had come up at Michigan State where that kind of brought home the lessons you learned on that board, and she volunteered this example.
Now, in the article, you indicate that foreigners on temporary visas made up 46% of science and engineering graduate students at Georgia Institute of Technology and Michigan State, 41% at MIT, and that's in 2009. And that China sent over 76,000 graduate students to the U.S. in 2010-11. Up almost 16% from the prior year. How can federal officials really keep track of who's doing what here?
Well, I think that's very difficult to do, and as a result, that's why they have so many concerns. There is a complex federal system that I don't really understand all that well, but that seeks to monitor every foreign student, and so they do what they can there. But it is a difficult issue. Of course, the vast majority of foreign students are here, legitimately, and one might argue on their behalf that the reason they're so dominant in science and engineering fields of American universities is that they're very bright, they bring a lot to the table, and American students may not be as interested or as strong. So a lot of people argue, we might lose some innovation or lose some technical secrets through, infiltration. But on the other hand, we gain a lot from these students bringing their capabilities.
I'm talking to Dan Golden, a Bloomberg reporter. You can find his story on Bloomberg.com. Now, Dan, you note that attempts by countries in East Asia, including China, to obtain classified and proprietary information by academic solicitation has jumped eightfold in 2010 from the previous year. These kinds of attempts from the Middle East have doubled. That's according to a DOD report from last year. But what kind of information do these solicitations give access to?
Well, they don't necessarily succeed in getting the information, but typically what will happen is, let's say a country is interested in a certain kind of research that a professor is doing. The solicitation, somebody might write the professor and say, you know, I'd like to collaborate with you on a paper. Please send over your first draft so, you know, I can read it and see if we could collaborate. Or they might just say, can I come and study with you, which sometimes might be legitimate. Other times there might be an ulterior motive. They might, you know, come over and send, you know, can I, you know, visit your lab? Can I take pictures? Those are the kind of solicitations that they're talking about.
So when you talk to MSU President Luana Simon about this problem, I mean, with 46% of science and engineering graduate students at MSU coming on temporary visas, how do university officials really know what happens once these students go back home?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I don't think they I mean, they don't necessarily know what they do when they go back home. I mean, the U.S. has a regulatory kind of system in place, which is that, you know, there's levels of sort of protection on research. If research is, you know, basic and fundamental, it could be published anywhere, then foreign students are allowed to work on it, and there's no distinction made between them and American students. Now, the next level up is called export-controlled research, which is more sensitive. And in those cases, there's rules that only American citizens or permanent residents can work on the export-controlled research. And so the idea would be there that foreign students don't get access to this kind of higher-level secret research.
So from your research into this story, is it clear then that with the tens of thousands of foreign students coming on temporary visas, that there's no question that some of them are in fact here as operatives for foreign governments?
Well, most of the people I talked to seem to agree that at least a very small number are. You know, it's, you know, very small percentage, obviously, but certainly, there's been enough cases and so on that indicate that you know, it's you know, it does happen.
Now, you tell the story of a Grand Valley State University student who went to study overseas in China, as many American students do, and actually ended up being recruited to attempt to get a government job to provide information to the Chinese government. Is this, I mean, how exactly did this happen, and is this something that federal officials are concerned about?
Yeah, they're worried about, you know, what's going on in academia is as it becomes more global. It's not just that more foreign students come to the U.S., it's also that more American students go abroad. I mean, there's a lot of American universities that are opening campuses or research centers or whatever around the world. NYU and Duke have campuses opening in China in the next, you know, in the next year or so. And there's many more. And so I think one of the concerns the FBI expressed to me was, once these students go over there, they might, you know, fall prey to the intelligence services over there. You know, I mean, you can, you know, they didn't really, you know, expand on this, but I mean, you can imagine a situation, maybe somebody's in trouble over there or something, and they are vulnerable. And in this, the case of this kid named Glenn Shriver, he was over there in college and then went back after graduating and went back to China and, you know, became friends with some Chinese intelligence service officers, and they paid him $70,000 and they had him come back to the U.S. And he applied to be in the CIA and in the Foreign Service, and he was, you know, discovered his relationship with Chinese intelligence and was, you know, sent to prison.
Finally, your view on the story after having researched it so deeply is this a real serious problem, or one that's being handled and it really shouldn't be of a major concern to Americans?
Well, I think it's an issue to be concerned about because, you know, universities are very, very eager to be global and expand their ties, opening more campuses over there, bringing over more foreign students and faculty, more joint conferences, more everything. And I mean, universities should probably want to do that because they want to be open. They don't want to be left behind. But if there's great work going on in other places, you know, they don't want to be insular. But I think, you know, at the same time, you want to make sure that you're not being hoodwinked and that, you know, you maximize the benefits of these kind of relationships and minimize the drawbacks. So I think it's something to keep an eye on.
Dan Golden, a Bloomberg reporter. You can find his article on this story at Bloomberg.com. Dan, thanks for joining us this evening.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.
And we're coming right back. I'm Michael Cohen, and you are listening to 1320 WILS.